Accession number 32715, reel 2.
Then we took and we had, the 100th, they call it the Bloody 100th, lost so many airplanes. I flew four times with them in a composite group. They always put me on the end, on the back, coffin corner, you know. Well, those were the only missions. They were never attacked. So when I was up in Minnesota, we asked the head of the German fighter force, Adolf Galland, did you pick on any certain outfits? We knew damn well he did. And he says, no, we took them as they came. I thought, you and Adolf, too. Well, we had a big square B on the tail, and they had a square D. Well, with me sticking out there, they probably flew by and saw the B and kept going, you know. So they were the only time they were, you know, oh, boy. To fly with that bunch. Oh, my buddies that survived, we had a lot of my buddies that were killed in that outfit. But so we took and we had a lot of interesting experiences, like right about that time, you know, the Germans had almost a whole air force in Norway. They had B-17s, B-24s, 26s, P-51s. They had all the Stirling bombers, the Halifaxes, Lancasters. You know, these airplanes were forced down, and they took and they repaired them, and they had them flyable again. Well, we were told if we get over Germany and we have trouble, we can't get back. Destroy the radio equipment and the bomb site and put your wheels down, and a couple German fighters will pick you up and take you into a field. That's where they got a lot of airplanes. But we never had that misfortune. But they said they bombed, they fought the 100th because they bombed the girls' school. And they said they put the wheels down, and when the fires came, they shot them down, and all sorts of goofy stories. The war bred a lot of goofy stories. But right about that time, it was early, about 15 missions in, we took and had news that the Germans were taking 17s and putting extra guns on them, joining formations and shooting them up, and then taking off. Well, one day we're flying, and I was tail end, and a fortress came alongside of me with all engines running. Well, I called the CO and said, what's the score? Here's this guy, you know. Why did he leave his group? They said, well, keep an eye on him. Well, we heard about these gunships. So I had every man on my crew turn his guns on the cockpit. Well, you got 250s on top, you got one on the side, and the ball turned in. You know, I imagine it made him a little nervous. We got to the channel, and he turned around, went back to Germany, and I called our little friends, the fighters, told them where he was, and we saw him, they blew him up. So that was one of our scariest things. Well, one of my first practice missions was scary. We're flying along, and my co-pilot said, turn, the guy in a parachute coming down. We lost a lot of airplanes in just forming to go on a mission. Now, we had, we'd take off about one every minute or so, and it was always overcast in England. We had one sunny day. And it was overcast. So you'd be in the clouds right off the bat. In fact, one day I took off, and I couldn't see my inboard engines. And we had a full bomb and gas load, and boy, did I fly in some of the day. If you went a half a degree up, you're off the runway. See, so, scary as heck. Well, we made it, and we get up there, and so we're supposed to climb at, what was it? It was 300 feet a minute. That was supposed to be it, so that you'd have a slow climb. Well, some of the guys were scared, and they're going and trying to go 1,000. Other guys go 200. Your airplane didn't go like that. You knew you went through someone's contrails. You know, someone just passed by. So it got scary. So one time we came out of the clouds. We're looking down the nose of a B-24. He's going, it went in the clouds. And that's hard to get back on instruments. Well, we got on, we came out. And our group went over. Now, each group would shoot flares. Ours were red-green. So we'd fly around looking for the red-green, and we'd join up with them. See, some were red-red, and all different signals. Well, then we fly over. We always had about 20,000 feet when we hit the coast of France. We never bombed France by instruments. It was always visual if we had, like, buzz bomb sites, and we had several targets in France. And around after D-Day, the Germans always shoved us out. So we had to come in over south of France. And we came in, we were instructed, we came in at 10,000 feet to bomb anything that was moving before the invasion. And boy, that was, we lost airplanes then. I think they could hit you with a rifle just about. Well, I think I'm gabbing enough, but what happened, we were going, we hit Schweinfurt, which was called Bloody Thursday. There's whole books written on it. And we lost 65 airplanes that day. And I had a special major took over the radio. He was monitoring the German frequencies and sending the Germans different places, you know. And he calls me up and said, call the CO. I said, what's up? He said, we're going to see the entire German Air Force at our initial turning point. Well, I saw the biggest dogfight I ever saw in my entire life. Germans, Americans, self-colliding. It was really something. And that's where we lost the 65 airplanes. And that's 650 men, you know. That's a lot for just a half hour's work. And we bombed Schweinfurt. And then they moved the ball bearings over to the Volkswagen plant. We went on that mission, and they briefed us we were going to hit the Volkswagen plant. And they said, we got in the airplane, instead of 12,500, we had 2,000-pound bombs. I called the CEO, and they said, hey, we got the wrong bombs. I don't think we can go. He said, come along, you can bomb by yourself. Oh, my bombardier just loved that. You know, they used to be called toggleers. The bombardier would drop them, and then they'd drop on him. Well, so we went and turned out that our bombs were the ones that hit and destroyed the whole Volkswagen plant. To this day, I'm watching out for red Volkswagens. I think that's going to run me down. For sure. But, so we, and so that was one of our hardest missions. And then after that, we one day the fellows were going to go somewhere, and they called it off. And then, so where are you going? They wouldn't tell a secret. Well, they called off because there was somebody who was going around town giving pamphlets telling them they were going to Russia, see. Well, they called it off, and about 3 days later, we were assigned to go. So we packed our bags and got in the airplane. And I took along a major who was sent by General Doolittle. They put a special plastic door in the belly, you know, where the other guys go to climb up. I could never get up there. If I tried to go, my guys were up there shoving me up. Never could make that door. But he mapped the whole trip out. We carried him around with us. So we bombed the Messerschmitt plant in East Prussia, went on to Ploiesti. Half the group went to Kiev. And we came over the university town, and all the buildings you could see right down to the basement, 10-story, 12-story buildings. Germans destroyed everything. And we came in and landed there. And the first group that went in there, they had a pile of B-17 tires about two stories high. The Germans came in at 20,000 feet. The airplanes lined up, and they just bombed. And all they had was Bofors, which could only go to about 20,000, and machine guns. And the fellows that were there said, the Russians were in the plane, shoot. Hey, you darn fool, those things won't go that high. And so they destroyed almost all the airplanes. Well, when we were there, they split them up, and we had our first fighter escorts then, our P-51s, and that was very comforting. So we went, and while we were there, they fed us. I'll never forget, we had sea rations. We had three boxes, breakfast, dinner, supper. And we were there, outside the fence there, all the people, half naked, you know. And they were all sitting out there, and here they had it set up for us, Hoska and all that, delicious meals, you know. And it was really funny, too. One little gal was serving us. She had ribbons. I said, what's that for? She said, she's a Moscow fighter pilot. She shot down about four Germans. Oh, the big pilots moved. So we took, and I asked one of them there, Red Cross gal, what the people were. And they said, well, they're starving. They're waiting for what is left of our stuff. So I talked to the guys, and we decided we'd eat sea rations. And we gave the food, and the Russians thought we were crazy to help, you know. Americans don't. So we took and we flew two missions out of Russia, and we bombed the Ploiesti oil field and another field in Poland, and we greened them. But Russian bombs were funny. They didn't go like that, you know. The guys had a hard time finding where they were going to go. And so while we were there, we didn't get attacked at all, so we flew from there over Yugoslavia into Italy and bombed Ploesti again. And then we landed in Italy. And we had a general and two colonels, and our major were all enjoying Rome so much that we were there a week. We couldn't get them out of there. But so our last mission was from there to England. Well, I sent my wife a telegram, all done, coming home. And I was telling someone that the group that finished, the guys that finished just before me, were going to go home. And the colonel said, no, you're not going home. You're going to fly weather. Well, I've been taking up a 17 and fly around and see what's going on. The Germans flying over. You know, the overcast, you can hear the diesels going over. Well, he said, I don't want to, oh, okay, excuse me, Dave. He said, I'm not going to do it. You're going to do it. So he takes his taxi out, and he runs the right wing into the gas truck. So you're going home. So it's my turn. I finished my 35 missions and joined what they call the Lucky Bastard Club. And they put the table ready as they come in the mess hall. Tablecloth, silverware, steaks, everything, you know. Wine, everybody comes in, you're lucky. Yeah, we felt good. So then the colonel says, you're not going home yet. I said, why? He said, you're going to fly weather. I looked him right in the eye, and I says, where are they parking the gas trucks? You're going home. You're going home. So we went home, and we went home on the Queen Mary. They kept us in harbor. There was 1,000 of us on the ship. It was virtually empty. And who was on the ship? Mr. and Mrs. Churchill. They were going to Halifax, you know, to meet with Roosevelt. Well, I was plopping around the whole thing one day, and Mrs. Churchill came to visit us all. She's charming, charming woman. And I'm walking all over the place, and I'm in the hallway up to my knees in carpet. I think, uh-oh, somebody, you're in the wrong place. I look in this room, who's sitting there in this black jacket with a cigar? Churchill. I said, oh, my God. He looks at me, he says, yes. And I says, how the hell does a guy get out of here without getting shot? And he, I say, oh, boy, don't worry. He says, put on the hole, you're all right. So I went. Well, I had another street. We were treated like kings. It was really something. We ate off of menus. We had the silverware. We had everything, you know. They treated us royally. And one day the mess hall bell rang, and I'm running, going up a narrow hall, companionway. This big colored fellow's in front of me. And, come on, boy, move. You know, I'm poking him. You know, don't get in my way when I'm going to the mess hall. About the third time, come on, boy, move. He turns around, faces me here, and says, are you in that much of a hurry? Joe Lewis. Take your time, Joe. He was a charming man who everybody took advantage of, I'm sorry. But then we came into Halifax, dropped off Churchill, went to New York, and we were separated. And that was the end of it. So we went home. And then I say I was in the Air Force yet, and I was sent to, I was supposed to be a B-29 instructor, and I never saw a B-29. That was the Air Force, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I went to Biloxi, where we had our second son. And that was it. But when I came back, I went back to the University of Chicago, got my grades up, corrected the ones that were bad. I came out with a B-plus average and applied to dental school. I was accepted. I had 4 years of college, 4 years of dental school. And then I went on a dental internship program back in the Air Force. And that was the time we had our second son. So I was stationed at Keesler Air Force Base. And then I had my own air base at Bainbridge, and I was base dental surgeon there. I could have stayed. I was offered. My wife didn't like the military. You know, mm-hmm. I think what turned her off, she's General Powell's wife was sitting there, and my wife happened to be sitting next to her. And some colonel's wife comes over, Mrs. Powell, would you like some more coffee? No, thank you. My wife said, I will, please. Those women have pores there. I wanted to come back here to Arlington Heights to set up my practice when I was coming out. And I couldn't get a flight out, so I had the major's wife. I had all the officers' wives. I was very privileged in that respect. She was there, and you look sad. I said, well, I wanted to get home, and I couldn't get an airplane. Oh, is that right? Her husband was in charge of the flights. That afternoon, I get a call. When do you want to go? They flew me in O'Hare. I stayed there for 2 days, and then they flew me back. But the women have a lot to say. Well, I think that's about any question.
Doc, tell us about the time your path and Gunther's paths crossed when he was working in the Gunther Stoltz.
No? Yeah, Gunther. He was about that. Gunther was with the Wehrmacht, and he. We were comparing. He was talking about shooting at us all the time, or something. Well, he saved a lot of fellas from getting killed that were shot down. But I loved Gunther. He was
when I was in Chapter 89. Yeah. When you guys the two had this conversation one chapter meeting about when he was working in one of the factories on this enormous raid that you went on.
No.
He was there when you were bombing the factory. He was in.
That could be. I don't remember that.
Oh, that was a whole meeting.
That was a long war. I was only there for 5 months. You know, I flew 7 missions in a row. You want to talk about somebody being sort of sad and tired? Oh boy! In fact, one mission, they said the guys were reneging too much, and you couldn't get out even if you were sick. And I had 104 fever. And I was dragging, and. The medic, he said, you got to go. Orders, you know. So I was actually, when I came back, I actually fell asleep on the approach. Wow. The pilot woke me up. Okay, you got it. But we had a lot of guys. But we had Callie Lil was on the radio, and she'd come in and say, oh, you guys, you think your wives and girlfriends are home waiting for you? No, they're with the 4Fs. They're having a lot of fun, you know. You think that's innocuous, dumb, you know. But then we'd censor the mail, and honest to God, the guy's writing home, stay home, quit running around. Oh. So we take the letters back. We're like chaplains, you know. Come on, you know what? So we made them change the letters. But there's a lot of propaganda, and we would have shot her joyfully, but they let her live, I guess. Same as Tokyo Rose, so... Yeah.
Doc, you talked about forming up and then shooting red and green rockets and stuff. Did you
flares?
Not, flares. Did you not use radio communication when you were?
No.
Not at all.
No radio. No, but like over Germany, we're flying along. We're all sort of sad one day, and no radio. Stay off the damn radio. So we're flying along in silence, and we're all feeling lousy, and all of a sudden, who dead? Who right there? Who dat say who dat? Then the colonel comes out and says, who said that? Who dat? He says, who dat? He broke us all up. That was the end of it. We didn't worry about it after. But fighter attacks were fast, you know. They were, you know. You see all these guys shooting. They didn't have that many bullets, you know. They could go through a thing of bullets in a short time. He had a burst, you know. But it's funny. Like, my guys, we're flying along, and a couple of P-51s come along. I looked at them. They come by, and they got big crosses on them. My guys are leaning on the guns. Did you see them? Oh, we missed them. Oh, good. Yeah. Like one time, P-38 came in the pursuit curve, and I was on the far end, and I was the so to call it, you know. So I'm looking, seeing if a plane came in here, we're flying here, we'd stack this way, and this one here would go up. So we had all these guns to shoot at, you know, stack up and down. And so we're all stacked. Boy, he had a load of guns on him. And he pulls up a little bit. Hold it. It's P-38, you know. So darn fool didn't realize he was almost shot down. We had one P-38. He lost an engine. He joined us under the belly. And we, mother him, took him over. So that was fun. But there were so many things happened that I forget. You know, I don't make a regular talk of this. As I remember it, so a lot of things I remember when I get home.
Frank, I'm naive to some of the things, or most of the things maybe I should say that went on during the war, but you said that you had bombed oil fields in Poland. Is that because Germans had taken over and grew petrol for themselves?
Yeah, we were going to bomb an oil field in Prague. And since I'm a Czech and my family are all Czechs, they called me and said, do you want to go on this mission? I said, why? I said, well, you're bombing Czechoslovakia and Latvia. Oh, I said, don't worry, my relatives were either hung for horse thieving or they got out of the country or something. This is true. When we got to Prague after the war, all the sodas were in Vienna. They were dumb. But no, we went out. It was the worst 13-hour mission. It was really, oh, it was miserable. And the jackass that led us went around and made another turn, came around again, dropped the bombs in the turn. They were 100-pound bombs. My bombardier was there kicking them off the catwalk. Yeah, it was very, very bad. He got a bad report. Just like the second mission, Berlin, our Colonel Mack led it. I didn't realize it. We're flying, and contrails, you know, they're pretty things to see. They're treacherous. You're flying along here, and you hit a contrail, and your airplane wants to go into this one. So you take and shove these throttles and pull these off, you know, try to keep away. And then as soon as it lets go, whew, you're ready to go over. So you had to be fast on the thing. And he led us in every contrail there was between here and Berlin. So we take it, we come back, and the pilot had to go in and see the colonel and say, well, what did you think of the mission? And I came in and said, well, it's two guys sitting in the corner. I didn't notice them. And whoever led us on that damn thing should be shot. He said, why? He said, less than every damn contrail. I said, well, I'll try better next time. So when I got my air medal, I had finished, you got for every six missions, you got the air medal, or then the cluster. So I had my second air medal, and he's pinning it on, and he's smiling for the camera. He said, you started a little bit interesting. He's over by now, you'd be dead. You know who those two guys were? Yeah. Visiting generals. Oh. It makes me uncomfortable. I didn't care about that. I wanted to get home.
Back to demolishing those oil fields. Is that because the Germans were getting their petroleum?
Yeah. Okay. Near the end of the war, tank corps and everybody went to airfields and stole their gas. Because if you're not using it, you know, so they took it. Just like D-Day. Oh, that was exciting. We came out, and that's when they painted the airplanes with those white stripes, you know, so we wouldn't run into each other. So we saw the airplanes in the morning, and we come out to briefing, and they said, this is it. You know, they had the Quonset hut, like here, full of men here. They had on the wall was the big map, and it had a curtain on there. And they draw the curtain. And they go this way, you know. And we watched the string. The string. Oh, no. Well, so that told us where we're going to go. See? So, what was this now? D-Day. This is it. You know, so we flew two missions, and we bombed France, the coast. At that time, we bombed it by radar because we never could bomb France unless we could see our targets. That was the deal, see. But we hit it, and then we came back, and everybody wanted to fly D-Day. So I took my favorite person, the head of the mess hall, used to take care of me good, and as you can see, he went along and I took Chaplin along. And boy, that was funny because the flak about 10 miles away, ooh, we almost got hit. And after we dropped our bombs, we fly up and down and sightsee, you know. So the hell back here, you know, there's some Germans still here. So then we went and watching the buildup of the docks and stuff, it's exciting, and all the ships coming in, all that. They didn't have that. They were having trouble on the Eastern Front, so they didn't have that full armament of airplanes there. They had fighters, but not that many. And then we had our P-51s were a blessing. We flew our first missions. Oh, about 15 missions without fighter escort. Well, we had Spitfires would carry us out. And they'd say, see ya, fellas. You know, we'd go the rest of the way by ourselves and come back, and they'd meet us and take us in. But when we had 51s finally, first of all, they had the 51s. They had Allison engines in them, which was a lemon. And finally, they took, and they used it for ground coverage, B-51. Then they got the Rolls-Royce engines. Oh, boy, what a difference. It was the best fighter in the war. And so we had them for, you know, they put belly tanks on. Then the Germans were clever. They had belly tanks on there, too, sometimes. And it was really funny when you're in formations, they P-51, yeah. ME-109. Yeah. But then when you had to leave the formation, you're by yourself. I think it's a P-51, but keep an eye on it. Boy, you got very cautious. and it was where you were at the time. But it was exciting. The only guys that usually survived crashes were the tail gunners, because they had to shoot the hell out of these